You are now listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
This is Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Is it?
It is.
I don't believe you.
It's also 3 p.m. on the East Coast.
Is it?
It is.
And are you some sort of time genie?
I am a time genie, and you are the Aladdin to my genie. You have rubbed me the right way, sir.
Whoa.
Yes.
So in this analogy, what's your lamp, brother?
What's I don't know, man. I'm going for one of those cost-efficient, energy-efficient environmental lamps.
Okay.
Can you imagine like a genie going through a sustainable... I don't even know what I'm talking about.
This is going too far.
this has gone way too far. Sustainable genies for the 21st century.
I don't think it'll ever happen. Not in our lifetimes.
I'm not Jimmy, by the way.
And I am Jimmy.
You are. So that would make me Elon, in theory.
I don't know. I don't believe you with the time, the show. I don't even know. Who are you?
We are your purveyors of the audio artifacts from the yesteryears.
Yes. If you, again, have any of these artifacts, and we're talking about, you know, an old garage band you had or a recording of an awful Thanksgiving, we want to hear it. Send it in lostandrewound@gmail.com.
Radio Free Brooklyn is always in need of your financial assistance, and if you wish to provide us with a sponsorship, you can do so at radiofreebrooklyn.com/LAR. You could be a direct sponsor for the show that way, or alternatively,
you can go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge and pledge to the whole station.
To the whole station, as little as, I think, like $1 or $2, and then as much as however which way you want to go, you know, in the level of commitment financially, and
again,
get swag
is,
for that.
Yeah, this is commercial-free radio.
Commercial-free radio.
Commercial-free radio.
But not swag-free radio, because if you donate, then you get a present.
So much swag.
Swag.
So much swag.
Swag, swag.
Swaggity, swoogity.
Swiggity, swaggity, swig, swig,
swag. You could have like a tote bag and put your small dog in it. That's amazing.
Let's start the show. For the past 3 years, Jeremy Hammond has performed stand-up all over New York and is currently acting as a co-host for both The Shape of Comedy to Come and Slugfest, in addition to his involvement as contributor to The Hard Times. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hi, hello.
Katie Rose Leon has recently moved back to New York after making her mark on the comedy scene in Portland, Oregon for 6 years. She's performed everywhere from there to Indiana, and now she's teaming up with the Nobodies on a new drag and comedy show called Rude as Hell. Welcome, Katie Rose.
Hi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
These two grew up together on Long Island. We're heavily musically involved during high school, and now you guys are both here on the show today to talk about your old bands.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I'm actually back for a second time.
Those who heard our show a few weeks ago, remember we alluded to a ghost episode. Jeremy Hammond, along with our good friend Anna Cowger, we recorded the show.
And it was great.
Yeah.
It was fun. I had a great time. I feel like we touched on a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, because most of our shows are usually pretty awful, but that one, it was really nice.
And so it didn't happen. It didn't get recorded properly. We're sorry that it didn't get recorded properly, but whatever the case is, here we are now. We're doing it again, and we have Katie Rose Leon here in the studio.
You're not going to be like the new Aunt Viv, right?
That is just a deep cut.
All right, we're starting off on the right foot.
Katie Rose, you got into comedy in Portland, right?
Yes, I did.
You've been now back in New York for, what, like not even a year?
Yeah, it's been like 6 months.
How is getting into the comedy scene here?
Oh, it's been interesting. It's weird because I grew up here, so it's not like I'm new to New York, but I'm definitely new to the New York comedy scene, and there's a lot of social hurdles to get over, but I think I'm very talented. So
she is very talented. You're looking to me for validation. It's accurate.
I was actually curious if you have been playing some kind of like a big brother to the scene here.
If anything, Jeremy is my baby.
Yeah, but I was gonna say early on starting comedy, Katie was definitely sort of like a big sister figure to me, whose approval I was seeking. Because I was a new little baby, and she'd been doing it for like a million years. But I don't know. I mean, like for like the first like month or two that you were here, I was trying to push and pressure everybody I knew to get her
really
on shows and like do
it.
What they could.
Clearly, you have been doing a lot of classy joints in Manhattan. You could say you should stay away from this place, Katie Rose. You should definitely go here.
But nothing like a comedy bio to really get people thinking that your accomplishments are substantial.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those things where, you know, to be like a working comedian and then a famous comedian and then a rich person, these are all different things.
Yes, that's true, and I am none of those.
So far, since you have been only doing it for 3 years,
yeah,
what has been the ultimate lesson that you've learned so far just in your experience of doing comedy?
The biggest lesson is one that I've learned actually pretty recently, which is that too many people in comedy like rely on the idea that other people love comedy.
Yep.
There's this weird idea that everybody in stand-up comedy has, that everybody out there loves stand-up comedy. And if you have a show where you just say, hey guys, it's a great stand-up comedy show, come see some stand-up comedy, people are going to come to your show. Nobody does that. Nobody really likes stand-up. And when I think about how I found stand-ups when I was young, like before I was trying to actually be a stand-up and becoming a nerd about it, like, the way I would find people is, like, I'd like them on a TV show or I'd like them on something that they do. And then I would Google their name and stand-up to see if they do stand-up. And then that's how I'd find them.
You know, it was actually pretty funny because I had a moment that happened the other day, and it was really surprising to me. I had a guy come to me after a set. It's like this older guy. He looked sort of penguinish, you know? And he comes over, he waddles over. He's a very nice guy.
He looked like a penguin. Very nice guy.
Anyway, and he goes, oh, you were funny. You were really funny. And I don't like comedy. And I was sort of taken aback, too. He's like, I don't like comedy. I don't like stand-up.
See, that's the thing is, that's a very mindful stance. People don't think that they don't like comedy, but when you go to somebody and you say, we've got a stand-up show with 5 fantastic stand-up comedians, and you're like, I could just go home. Like, that's more what I mean, is like, people are ambivalent to stand-up comedy overall, and so you have to give them something else that they want.
I think one problem, and I was thinking about this recently, is that when stand-up comedy goes bad, when it goes off the rails, it goes really off the rails.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, you're just listening to someone talk that you don't want to listen to.
Yeah.
And when you're out at comedy, it's not as easy as like changing the channel.
What's the scene like in Portland in that regard, Katie Rose?
So it's a little different now. Portland had a really rapid growth, so it's a very different city from when I started stand up to when I left. However, generally speaking, there was a hot 3 or 4 years where stand up was hot in Portland. Like, we got a weird buzz, so it was a little different that people wanted to go see stand up, and it's a smaller town. So people are more into it. However, there is still that element of people not into it. And a lot of people would forget that in interesting ways, because a lot of shows happened at bars before or after karaoke. So you would be doing comedy to people waiting to have fun. And that's a real bummer.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, we'd all be like, our scene's, like, blossoming right now. Like, don't you want to be part of this cultural phenomenon? They're like, I want to sing Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. It's my birthday.
Wow, that's a perfect karaoke song. I can't believe I've never seen someone do that.
Yeah, why don't people do that?
It's very big in Austin, Texas, is what I found out I went there. That's the reference people make when they say bad karaoke song.
Man, I want to do like an acoustic cover of that song.
I seem to recall
it. Let the bodies hit the floor.
I seem to recall it. In Portland, Oregon, there was some kind of karaoke action going on with puppets, and somebody did a puppet show karaoke night with puppets doing that song.
You know what it reminded me of? Newgrounds.
Oh my God, I was just thinking about Newgrounds.
For those of you guys out there, for those of you out there who don't know Newgrounds, that aren't from the same generation, it was this website back when the internet was young. It was basically like a place where people would put weird stuff, not quite as bad as something awful.
But just, definitely bad at
but
times.
Definitely bad at
like
times.
Like an e-bombs kind of thing,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, because I remember before Newgrounds consolidated everything onto Newgrounds, because Newgrounds initially was just the message board, I think. But there were other sites that those guys ran, and one of them was called Assassins.
Oh, God.
And that was a site for Flash games where you would murder various pop culture figures.
I do
like
remember
the
all the games. Like, it was all these Flash games.
Yeah.
Back when Flash was like really hot, when it just dropped.
What town in Long Island did you guys grow up in?
I grew up in Port Washington, and Jeremy was from Glen Cove.
Yeah. So you were close by.
Yeah, different sides of the viaduct.
But you both went to the same high school together?
No. We went to the same art camp together.
Hell yeah.
Ooh, this is very interesting. And so it was at this camp that you shared your love for Flash animations.
No, I don't think we talked about Flash very much. We were in a cartooning class together. Yes. Though.
That's cool.
That was where we really met. Although we did meet the summer before, sort of. But we didn't really know each other that well. We became friends in this cartooning class.
Yeah. Cool.
We had this teacher, Al, who was like 90. He's definitely dead.
We called him Crazy Al.
Crazy Al. When he like really liked somebody's drawing, he'd jump on the table and show it to everybody and be like, have you ever seen a 90-year-old do this?
He used to come up to me as part of critique and draw eyelashes on all my female characters.
Oh, he's from a different generation.
Yeah, I loved him, though.
Would you say that the friendship that you guys created was the most long-lasting out of all the people that you met during this cartooning camp period?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I guess I hadn't really thought about it that way before, but yeah, certainly. We had a whole clique that kind of stayed together for years and years and years, but slowly that clique has kind of fallen apart, and we don't like some of them anymore.
Their cartooning went in a bad direction.
Yeah, or they just didn't do
their
drawings anymore.
Wait, how old were you guys? Are you guys around the same age then?
Yeah, I think we graduated the same year, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so we were 13
12
or 14.
13.
Yeah.
The music projects of which you have, was this during the time that you guys were both fine artists? Okay. Fine artist being sort of a basic umbrella. I'm sure it was very fine. Like the apple juice.
It was pretty good.
So fine. So
Katie
fine.
Has some very innovative ideas about drawing noses on cartoon characters.
God.
I always tell her this. I love her noses.
Are they phallic?
Sometimes, I guess.
Yeah. It looks like Animal Crossing a little bit.
Yeah, they kind of been likened to pickles often.
Yeah. Pickles, like red pickles. You know, those red ones.
Someone out there has a red pickle nose out there listening to this, and they're like,
they know.
Finally, someone gets me.
Red pickle, are we talking about a dog in heat? Because that's gross.
Ew.
Nobody wants to hear about that.
I would say the trajectory was we were into cruddy pop punk when we were at age,
yeah.
And then we stayed friends through high school, and that's when we started making bands.
Yeah.
I stayed drawing comics for a while. I think you and I started a sticker gang at one point.
Yes, we did.
What?
Yeah, I got really, really heavily into graffiti my senior year of high school.
Okay.
I have a tendency when I get really into something to like try to pull all my friends in to try to get into it too. And I'm like, come on, guys, we're all making zines now.
Yep, we did make
zines.
We
did make a zine together too. whatever the thing is that I'm into at a given time, I'm trying to get everybody into because I'm in love with it and I want to share that with everybody.
Is that how normally it went when you were younger? You were always the leader and always the catalyst for certain groupings and activities?
I don't know. That's probably a better question for you.
I would say yes. So Jeremy and I grew up in two different towns and we became friends at summer camp. So I feel like you were like the leader of your gang and I was the leader of my weird nerdy virgin gang.
Yeah.
And we would bring them together for various reasons.
Yeah, HerClick had a website.
Oh, God, I hope it doesn't still exist. There is some problematic material on there.
The Space Jam website still exists, so truly anything is possible.
Oh God,
somebody keeps paying for the Space Jam site.
I don't think it exists anymore. My gang was called Gavin's House Gang because we would go to Gavin's house, and I believe the website was gavinshouse.org, and we would...
Nonprofit.
So we got the zine. We got the site. Soon we're going to have our startup going.
But anyway.
Maybe we should.
The last time we chatted with you, Jeremy, on the Ghost episode, it was discovered that your scene was a little more the DIY punk scene. Everybody didn't really know how to play instruments per se, but they just learned and you kept getting better and you kept on playing shows and you were very much involved. I'm wrong.
I would say you're sort of right.
I would say
that that's a more accurate description of me than it is of the rest of my scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
There were a lot of very, very talented musicians in my scene who would be very upset to hear me say that I don't think they were, I mean, even the guitarist of my band, Sons of Thunder, was an amazing guitar player. Yeah, it was mostly me. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was just like, I want to be in a punk band, and so I just was.
I think the basis of our friendship was that in common. Like, neither of us had a lot of talent, but
yeah.
We're like, we're doing it!
Yeah, that's totally, yeah. That's
everything
totally
we did.
Isn't that sort of what this country is founded on?
Perhaps so.
We're not necessarily talented, but we're gonna do it!
Well, and essentially that's what punk was all about at the beginning, right?
Right.
It was like a lot of artsy weirdos who were just like, I want to be a part of rock and roll, but I don't really know what I'm doing.
I don't believe...
I want to invent a new kind of music.
Yeah, I don't believe Tina Weymouth from the Talking Heads necessarily was a great bassist when she first started, but she became great later, as the years progressed.
That's true.
You know, that whole band's ethos was not necessarily that they were proficient musicians, but that they just, as they continued getting better and better, so did their musicianship.
Although, I mean, eventually it became a very, very highly technical operation with them, right? Like, during that whole period, the early 80s when Adrian Belew was playing with them?
Yes.
That's some dad shit.
Oh my God, he's the best! What? Everybody loves Adrian Belew.
Sounds like a porno name.
Especially my
he's
dad.
He's the best. Oh my God, can we pull up a...
No, we're not listening to Adrian Belew right now.
Adrian Belew guitar
solo. Well, we do have to listen to a few songs from each of you guys.
All right.
These are songs that may or may not have been heard before. These are clips that probably have not been officially unearthed. But in the spirit of Lost and Rewound, that's what we are here to do. We are here to unearth the old artifacts and bring new life to it. Katie Rose, let's begin with you. We need some context. You have a song here called Scary Elevator.
So,
and what instrument are you playing?
It was a synth pop band, so we sequenced everything ahead of time. So it was like drum machines, like a guitar. We had a couple of different synths, and I did it with my friend Timmy, my partner in crime when Jeremy wasn't around. Basically my little sibling. While Jeremy was like punk as fuck, being in cool bands, I was this nerdy super virgin. I loved synth pop and I also loved joke bands like the Vandals and They Might Be Giants and Ween. Our goal was to sound like a jokey, like freeze pop or like something really put together, but we just ended up sounding like a really unsexual gravy train. And and this song is about Silent Hill 2.
I don't know about Silent Hill 2, but I think I'm going to learn after this song.
It's a survival horror game that we played a lot.
Yeah, just imagine a girl that's doing yoga that then turns into a demon, and while she's on all fours, like upside down, just starts scrambling towards you. That's basically
that's the one where the guy goes back to the town to find his wife, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then the final boss is the wife.
Yes, it's referenced in the song.
All right, well, you got the reference, so let's take a listen to Scary Elevator.
scared, but that radio reel happens, keep it on your arm. Although I don't really think that they mean us much harm. But then why the hell won't the elevator let us on off? On your lawn. Have you seen my dead wife? All I have is this left pipe and this gun, which I found in the shopping cart. I can't see in the spot. It's a good thing I have arms, but why won't the elevator let us on?
Better than I thought I was going to be.
Oh, right? Man. We're the best.
Okay, so that was when you were how old?
We wrote the song originally, I want to say, when we were like 15, but I think that recording we're closer to 17 at that point.
And if it's okay to ask, I I'm curious. So since this is based on a video game, that means this was probably like, what, mid-aughts or so?
Oh, yeah. This is probably like, all right, we graduated in 2006. So probably around then.
Quite captivating to hear that, because the first thing I could hear is like some definitely kind of indie shit, like maybe like El Tigre or something too.
Yeah, we loved Electro Clash and we loved 80s New Wave.
Yeah.
I definitely had some, I had a Mega Man vibe in there too.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Late game Mega Man when shit gets really hectic and you gotta like move fast.
Yeah, yep. This is really before chiptunes really became like mm-hmm. a big, big thing, right? Like that existed, but it wasn't.
It was starting to rev up. Like I remember I was really into that stuff, but once again, I had like no skills. Like Timmy was really good at programming and I was good at singing stuff to them in a microphone. I would be like, Timmy, I want it to sound like this. And they would be like, okay.
I don't know why, but I really, really love music about pop culture. To me, it's like, I think it's the best.
Yeah.
I got into this band. I could like Game of Thrones. I read when I was in high school. Actually, it was like really weird. My buddy was like, yo, everybody dies, dude. Read it. And he was like a bro dude. It was the weirdest thing. He was like, yo, bro, read it. They're all dead.
That's the same thing with the R.L. Stein books, man. Everybody dies except for one person.
Or
they were aliens the whole time.
Exactly.
So I got put onto this band that put out an album all about Game of Thrones, but the books, before the show came out. This band was The Sword.
The Sword.
And they're actually like, they're sort of a bigger band now.
The Sword is good.
Yeah, I like The Sword. No,
I don't even like Game of Thrones.
That album is really good, too.
That's a good name, too. How had nobody been called The Sword yet?
I don't know, but they're a good band. I think the name of it was Gods of the Earth. They have a song like To Take the Black.
What kind of music is it?
Like stoner metal?
Mm-hmm.
Sick.
Stoner.
It's good. No, it's a good band.
Stoner metal at Game of Thrones. I guess.
Yeah,
that feels right.
Look, wasn't there like a metal band or something that had a niche of dressing up as the McDonald's characters or something?
It's Max Sabbath.
That's right. That's true. Are they good?
Yes. Come to KRL for all parody bands.
Wait, I gotta actually
early
address...
aughts 2000 ska reference.
Okay, I'm sorry, I gotta bring this back because I caught this while looking you up, Katie Rose, because I know that there was something you did recently that, speaking of metal, you did a thing called 2 seconds to late night.
2 seconds to late night.
To late night. 2 minutes to late night.
2 minutes to late night.
Two minutes to late night. Yes. Thank you. 2 minutes to late night was at St. Vitus, a venue that I love dearly.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not really super into metal, I know the people who run it. What a fucking space. But you were there because you were doing comedy sets in a mosh pit.
Yep. during a Skeleton Witch concert.
Wow.
Yeah, 2 minutes to late night is metal talk show that my dear friends Jordan Olds and Drew Kaufman make, and they were like, would you like to do stand-up comedy in a mosh pit? I'm like, yes, sign me up. And I'm a little embarrassed of it because I didn't wear earplugs, so I am, like, shrieking while I'm doing it. And I was also the only comic that got straight up nailed by a dude. But what these boys didn't realize is I've been falling down my whole life, and I've also always been a tiny lady pushing my way to the front. So I'm used to being pushed down by men pretty much my whole life at rock concerts. So I pop up immediately, but everyone was like, are you okay? So I got a lot of free drinks. It was great.
The pit, man.
Performing shows is one thing, but going to shows, what was your experiences going to punk metal shows in Long Island? I know there was a pretty deep scene in the early aughts, 90s, etc.
Yeah, well, there was a really amazing scene in Long Island just before we got old enough to start going to shows pretty regularly. There was an amazing scene that was happening with bands like Latterman, Bomb the Music Industry, started out as Arrogant Sons of Bitches. That sprouted Laura Stevenson and the Cans. Mm-hmm. The Fad was amazing, too, but they were still carrying on.
Yeah.
But the point is, there was an amazing, amazing scene happening in basements in Long Island. And then right when we got there was sort of right when that all was dying.
The new wave.
All of them were going to college and moving on with their lives to go on and then do music again and then be amazing and blow up. But we were kind of stuck with this weird sort of remnant scene where some people were still around, but the bands weren't really as good anymore.
Did you resent that?
I didn't really know about it until later.
Yeah, we weren't, like, clued in as much because we were so young.
Yeah.
Also, music was kind of in transition at that time because it was not quite the 90s anymore, but it was still really early 2000s. So you had, like, Screamo, but then kind of that, like, the Hives stuff happening.
Yeah, that was when the Strokes had, like, completely blown nu metal out of the water.
Sure.
And, like, that all was over now.
But some people were still clinging to nu metal. Yeah. It was, like, a weird time.
Well, and that's sort of what the whole mainstreamo thing felt like to me.
Mainstreamo.
Like, yeah, it was pop culture. It was, like, modern rock radio trying desperately to cling on to drop D tuning.
Yep.
Like, that's all they
and
wanted
double
to keep.
Bass pedals.
Yes. Yeah, they tried their best. It didn't really work, though, did it?
No. My ska band had a double bass pedal.
You were in a ska band, too?
I was in a
ska band with a double bass pedal?
Yeah, it was like my
I just imagined it.
My ska band was early high school because it was like me and some seniors, and then this band was definitely myself. There's no recordings of the ska band. I wish I had them. I really did. But
and you guys didn't really play out very much.
No, we were like a very short-lived thing. We like did a couple Battle of the Bands and won a fog machine.
What was it? It was
with the fog machine
that was
the most important part.
The panda one, was it?
No, that was One Horn Army, which then we got a trombone player in addition to me. So I had to write on all our flyers in a Sharpie now featuring two horns.
One Horn Army now with two horns.
Come on, that's come amazing. On. We have time to that's listen good. To one more track before we go to break. We do have this other track, Silly Shirt for a Silly Guy.
So basically my band wrote songs about two things. Pop culture references or our friends that we were kind of making fun of. And we made this EP called Friends Shirts, as in friends, comma, shirts, friends, apostrophe, as shirts, because we had so many songs about people's shirts. And this was the crown jewel. It was originally written in Timmy's other band, The Zombonauts, but we realized it was really our track, so we did it, and it's really beloved. It was about this kid named Brian that would always wear those Hot Topic t-shirts with, like, silly slogans on them, and we kind of hated him, but we loved making fun of his shirts to his face. Also, we had previous...
Cold and dark pause.
You suddenly realized that her nerdy synth-pop band were also the bullies of their high school.
We were nerd bullies. We were straight-up nerd bullies. And also, in that
same watch out for those ones.
Vein, at one point we had written a musical that's lost to time called Gay Robot the Musical, in which the after-school robotics club built a gay robot. And then the future business religious leaders of America shut it down. And so we got in the habit before we started recording to do these sketches where we would pretend to be the after-school robotics club. So that is the story of a silly shirt for a silly guy.
Let's take a listen.
So I got it.
That was epic as hell.
Did this guy know about this song? Did you play it for him?
Brian was this kid that we never were sure if he was really our friend or not, and then we found out he was super homophobic, so we're like, screw that guy.
Wow.
He probably knew the song was about him, but we also like didn't really care.
He's probably the guy now who puts all the memes on his Facebook. I always think the silly shirt people are the same people who are like, look at this funny meme with a baby animal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's a direct correlation there. There must be.
We call them wacky cheese pants humor. You remember that?
Old life bits.
I'm stealing that.
Old life bits. Yeah, like in the early 2000s, there was like a whole genre of kid that was like, yeah, they wore those types of shirts. They're very into anime.
Yeah,
and
UFO
like,
pants.
UFO pants and like Invader Zim. And they're like, wow, random wacky cheese pants.
Yeah, how did they ruin all of the works of Jonan Vasquez for us?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that there's just so many people you can see with black eyeliner and an Invader Zim shirt, like girl on the shirt. And yeah. It drives you nuts after
a
while.
Bummer.
Katie Rose, after listening to these, what's one thing that you would be able to take away from it, and does it inspire you to make more music now as an adult?
I just was having so much fun, and I was really hard on myself as a kid. Like, nothing I did, drawing or music or trying to perform, ever seemed good enough at the time, but I'm like, that's pretty impressive for a couple of dumb kids making songs about what was essentially in-jokes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we
sure.
made a whole band of in-jokes.
And the fact that you guys even committed it to record is itself.
We recorded it, and then we performed that stuff live, which it is hard to drag a bunch of synthesizers when you're like two 16-year-olds to gyms and stuff where you're just playing with metal bands.
Yeah, and you never had a car.
No, I have never had a driver's license.
All right.
Timmy.
Classic New York.
Not when we were in the band. Like, we would just...
Wow.
You our friends would just drive us. Yeah. They liked us enough for some reason. Or we would walk it over if it was in town. It's just fun as hell. I wish I was having that much fun right now.
We're having a lot of fun here in the studio. You ready for some of Jeremy's old...
Oh my God, I can't wait.
When we come back, we'll get into some of the punk shit.
Right here on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Lost in Room Out. From the synth pop sounds of Port Washington.
Yeah, I was in Portland.
From the synth pop sounds of Port Washington, we now move over to the punk sounds of Glen Cove. Jeremy.
That was so difficult.
It's so labored.
I also want to make this clear, like, the synth pop sounds of Port Washington were just me and that one kid. Everyone was very annoyed at us.
This is not dominating the airwaves.
How was your band received, the Sons of Thunder?
I would say largely hated.
Mother approved.
But, well, we had a devoted following of about maybe 10 to 20 people who really liked us and would come see us whenever we were near. And then a whole lot of young ladies on the MySpace who would come see us because... Because
Jeremy was a hot teenager.
It's true. I was
he
a very
was
attractive
beautiful.
Teen.
So you guys had a MySpace page for your band.
Yeah, well, every band had a MySpace page back then.
Yes.
And you counted the number of hits.
Huh?
Remember that you would look at the head, you had hits.
Oh, yeah.
It was back in the day when people would count hits on web pages. That is a thing of the past.
That is a thing of the past.
And your top eight were other bands that you were like in the scene with or something.
Yeah, or you generally they were slightly above you in the scene, and you were like, we want to seem like we're cool and in with these bigger bands, and maybe if they're in our top eight, they'll, you know, be cool to us.
And what instrument did you play?
I was the singer.
You were the singer?
I was one of two singers of the band.
Okay.
And in the recordings that we're going to listen to, you really can't hear my voice very much at all.
Because they turned them down.
Yeah, they turned me down.
Why did they turn you down, Jeremy?
So there's two competing theories on this matter. One, my version of the story, which is that when we were at this guy's house recording this demo that we made, Brendan, the guitar player, was working on the guitar parts, and I just picked up the engineer's guitar that he had in his bedroom just to kind of play around with, and it was like a Fender Jaguar, and I was just kind of just noodling around on it, and he whips his head back at me, and he says, "Hey, don't touch that. There's only five of them in the world."
Uh-huh. Sure, buddy.
And I was like, oh, okay, sure, okay, and I didn't touch it again.
Yeah.
But I think that he was so angry with me for touching his beloved Jaguar that he
don't touch my Jag.
He took it out on you in production. Wow.
Now, the competing version of this story is that I did not know all the words.
I like that version more.
and that generally Dave, the other singer, did know all the words, and so he got to be the lead singer, and I was the backup singer, but in metal-influenced punk crossover band, there's no like lead and backup, it's just two guys shouting.
Right.
I like the double singer thing, though. It's rarer. You see it every so often.
Yeah, it worked for us, because he did the heavy lifting of being the singer of the band, and I just got to be like the... pretty guy in the front.
You were the punk hype man. You were the guy that's like, yeah, buddy, in punk.
I distinctively remember for a while you didn't even have lyrics. You would just shout Sons of Thunder, 1, 2, 3, go over
yes.
and over again.
Or variations of that, or just general gibberish. or reading out of a book. We had a lot of books that we would bring with us, and I would scream the sentence.
Someone actually wrote a book, not your book, with lyrics that
yes,
you
no,
wrote.
Yes, no. This was somebody else's, but this was a book about eugenics that was in Nick's basement. Nick, our drummer, was in his basement.
Okay, just clear that up.
I think I did Catcher in the Rye once.
Catcher in the Rye punk song.
Yeah.
When you guys would sing together, though, or singing loosely, using that phrase, but did you guys sound really different?
You had
a different style
different.
Of screaming?
I have a generally higher register, I think. Pretty nasal. And Dave had a very deep, like, adult voice. It made sense that he was the main singer. It's really more of an ego thing than anything else that I wanted to be.
You had to be the singer, man. It's the way to. It's come
yeah.
on. That's how you get the chicks.
I mean, really, it's like a job hired a replacement for you and then just never got around to firing you. Like, that's kind of what
happened.
Just
keep on sticking around.
Well, because I was the original singer. It was just me and Nick and Brendan. It was a three-person band, and I never wrote lyrics for the first, like, 6 or 7 months that we existed. And we were playing a lot of shows. We were playing in front of a lot of people in a lot of places on Long Island, and I was not doing what a singer is really supposed to do.
You only had so much room in your backpack for books.
Yeah.
I got to go to the library, guys. I didn't get a chance.
But so then they brought on Dave to be the second singer around the same time we got a bassist. And at that point, maybe a month of humiliating himself with me doing gibberish. And then he was like, I'm going to go ahead and write lyrics. And then he did. And then I didn't really learn them very well until after we'd recorded.
That's okay. A lot of the times on this show, I feel like I'm trying to go for scripted, and sometimes it just works better.
Exactly.
And then sometimes I'm like, no, I think we're going to have to script this part. It sounds a little better that way. We'll take a listen to the Sons of Thunder anthem.
I tried to count the times that you can distinctly hear my voice in that song.
How many times?
Three.
All right.
Yeah, and it was most definitely a whisper in the background.
Yeah, it's
it sounded like it was someone in the audience.
Yeah, it sounds like if you're in a band that has like a Didi Ramone type of guy who just occasionally shouts something
from the back, and he's not mic'd. Yeah,
and you're like, he's not important enough to be that high in the mix. That's what it sounds like. I am, but I didn't have an instrument. I'm like the guy in the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. You know what I'm talking about? The guy who dances for the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
But all the pictures were of you.
That's true, and all the pictures are of the skanking guy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands, even that don't necessarily fit in the mold of ska, that have that kind of member. Prodigy, the electronic band, had a guy who danced around and didn't do anything other than that. I want to say that Rocket from the Crypt had a guy who just danced around, too.
Wait, which guy in the Prodigy didn't do anything?
Not the one with large amounts of tattoos.
Yeah, not
and
the guy
piercings.
With the horns and whatever, and the eyeliner.
There were four members around the Fat of the Land. There was
what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there was Liam Hewitt or whatever his name is, and that was the main guy who did the music. Then there was the guy who, I don't know what his name is, with the face of the band with the crazy, you know, with the bull ring and the haircut. And then there was this guy named Maxim, tribal tattoo African with a very, very distinct, like,
so I thought
contact.
It was just the two of them. That's all I ever knew of the Prodigy.
There are
was
four
Devil
members.
Guy and African guy.
Right, there were four members. And then I'm under the impression from seeing Rocket from the Crypt live that there was, like, a guy who danced around, too. But I'm not certain of that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I'm into that.
You're into just
pro,
the showmanship.
I'm pro guy on standing over there doing something.
Hey, look, yeah. Tupac got his start dancing with the Digital Underground, so everyone's got to start somewhere.
Again, it's about stage presence. The craziest thing I ever saw somebody do at a show, a guy puked on himself on stage, and then he puked in a bucket and they drank it.
All right.
while they were playing.
That's some G.G. Allen type shit.
And I was impressed.
No, thank you.
I was impressed.
I saw a band once outside of a show. This is like one of the earliest Sons of Thunder shows I can remember playing out of Glen Cove.
Okay.
I think we were at, I can't remember the name of the bar, but it was a bar in Levittown that was a gay bar during the day and most of the night, and then late night would become a music venue. The promoter apparently was like the shadiest dude around, and he had just left. He left the show without telling all the bands that he was leaving. And so all these bands who were like hanging out in their vans and whatever couldn't go back in and get their equipment. He just locked the doors and was like, all right, peace, I'm out of here. So they tried calling him, couldn't get him. One of the scorned bands. They all individually, it was a ska band, so there were several of them. They each individually, all however many ska band members, put fingers down their throats, puked all over the front and back door of this venue.
Wow.
Pissed on it. One of them definitely took a shit in front of the door.
I think I know who it is.
I
was
going to
say, wasn't that the story of the Magnificent Seven? Wasn't that like swine? So then they protect the town right after that.
So you were doing mostly shows at more or less shady clubs in and around Long Island. Did you guys ever branch out of Long Island? Were you coming to the city? I was obviously proximity to New York City. You guys may have been able to go and see shows, or were you?
Oh, we were going
shows?
To see shows all the time in the city, but I don't know if Sons of Thunder ever actually played a show in the city until we did our reunion last year.
Awesome.
And we played at Don Pedro.
Nice.
Did you learn lyrics?
Yes, yes. Actually, Dave couldn't make it, so I had to be the only singer.
Yeah, what's up with the band now? I can only imagine that like they're all, they've all gone different directions.
Yeah, so Dave lives in Boston, and he, I think, is a hot sauce entrepreneur. Brendan is a community farming advocate. Eric is, I think, a journalist covering MMA. And then Nick, the drummer, is becoming a friar.
What?
Yeah, he lives in Wisconsin now, and he's becoming...
So what does he do, like fries, Oreos?
Yeah. A lot of Twinkies. Yeah, no.
Fascinating. Imagine what punk rock could do to minds. Evidently nothing if you're clearly branching out and finding, you know, religion in the Midwest. All it takes is like a Syd Barrett-type episode to be like, I know where I'm going in my life now. We have time for one more track, and it's called Crawl from Sons of Thunder.
Yeah.
All right.
Any context for this that we need to know other than your muted vocals probably? Or
I think I might be slightly more audible in this one. I'll keep count again. The song is called Crawl because it is a traditional creepy crawl song. It's a hardcore pit move. You'll hear the very awkward part in the middle where live people would be creepy crawling. On recording, just sounds really weird. There's a lot of classic stuff in that one.
Yeah, for sure. I have memories of going to, of all things, Posse Numbers in Kingston, Pennsylvania, and going to these positive hardcore shows.
Oh, yeah. Where,
don't ask me how I got into it. I don't know where my mind was. These devoted groups of fans who know every fill-in and know exactly where to stop moshing. Everybody is in lockstep.
Picking up so many quarters.
Oh, man. That's a story that we won't have time for. That's a classic tale. I was just going to briefly say that we did have a bit of a rivalry with a positive hardcore band.
Really?
They were called Ahoy.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, I know, right? Their music was actually really good. I give them that. Listening to it now, I'm like, wow, they were way better than us. They had a song called Breaking the Shackles that was about being vegetarian, and then we would introduce our songs sometimes as reapplying the shackles.
That's so good.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I remember when I was a kid, I'd go to these hardcore shows, and all the times afterwards, they're like, we're all going to this vegan place. And I was just like, what is happening? I'm like, weren't you the same guy that just punched that guy you didn't know in the face?
Yeah, like, it's the weirdest thing, because like vegan on its own has like kind of a wimpy connotation, right? Straight edge on its own has a wimpy connotation. You put the two of them together, and they become maniacs. They become like aggressive, really masculine
people. There was this guy at the hardcore shows when I was a kid. I used to go like when I was a teenager too, right around the same time. I feel like we're around the same age. There was this guy, we used to call him Old Man. He was 29.
He was always an old man.
Oh no.
He was 29. We called him Old Man.
I just turned 29.
Yeah, I'm turning 29 in a couple of months. So yeah, it's exactly the same thing, right? And he used to talk about how we were all pussies because of how we would fight at shows. He's like, you guys are just like spin kicking and punching each other in the dick. But he goes, you don't know. He goes, when I was your age, everybody, before you get to the show, you'd tuck a razor right in the bottom of your shoe.
Jesus.
So when you spin kick people, he's like, gotta get blood. He goes, if you didn't draw blood, it was a waste of a show.
Oh, fuck off forever. That's awful.
I still remember him giving me the speech. Mind you, the guy was 5'3".
Oh, man.
His body was pillowy, but not fat. totally thin and pitiful.
Hardcore is the worst.
Had you recently heard each other's music?
Well, I mean, not to spoil it, but we did listen to these songs last month when we tried to record this episode. But
sure.
Other than that, I mean, I listened to them a bit, like, leading up to the reunion show.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard Katie's music since high school. And the second one, the shirt song, immediately brought me back. Just like, yeah, like you get like the smell and everything. Suddenly you're just like, oh, that's what I smelled like back then.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, God.
Smelly Jeremy. That's what my friends call him.
We got to wrap up here. You have some shows coming up, yeah?
Yeah, sure. On the 23rd, I have Slugfest at the Beauty Bar.
Yep.
That's at 9 p.m. And then on March 4th, the following Saturday, I have the Hard Times show, Shape of Comedy to Come at Tender Trap. That's at 8 p.m. And then I have a bunch of shows coming up for my band that I'm in now, Headless Dentist. We're putting out an EP very soon on Beadwire Records. It's called Bagok. And we are playing March 2nd at Otto's Shrunken Head, March 7th at Come on Everybody, and on the 8th at Bowery Electric. Come check us out. We're a lot of fun.
And you could be otherwise found on many of our social media sites, yeah, including your website.
JeremyHammond.info, Twitter, at JeremyThunder.
Katie Rose, you have certainly a good social media presence. In fact, I would say that you are completely all over, and anybody can find you real easily.
Yeah, it's all I have. follow me on Twitter at Katie Rose. I was an early adapter. So that's like a best way to see my aggregated stuff. All my shows right now are in the works, so I don't have any dates to plug, but keep an eye out for Rude as Hell, which is going to be at the Mockingbird, and it's going to be fabulous.
Exciting. Katie Rose Leon and Jeremy Hammond here on Lost and Rewound this week.
Thank you guys so much for coming out.
My name's Alon.
And my name is Jimmy.
Thank you guys for listening.
Lost and Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn.
Get embarrassed.
Dude, you screwed the bitch so bad.
I did the same thing last time, too.